And thank you very much for the organising committee for inviting me to speak. So I'm going to tell you a bit about the successes and challenges that we've had in Australia. Some declarations. I've received research funding for observational studies and honoraria to attend and present that work. So firstly, on to the successes. They were always the most fun, really. So it really was a perfect storm in 2006. Our sort of FDA, called the Therapeutic Goods Administration, had approved the vaccine. It was invented by an Australian, albeit an immigrant. It was an election year. We had a budget surplus. We had no government debt. And we had a health minister, who's now our prime minister, who had a very dubious reputation with women. He said a lot of things, but such things as, I won't be rushing out to get my daughters vaccinated. He's currently, I think, leading the world trying to pull back on climate policy, but there he is surrounded mostly by men in blue suits, which he relates particularly well to. Now, in addition to that, our Prime Minister at the time, that's John Howard on the left-hand side there, his wife got cervical cancer that destigmatised the disease, and needless to say, he was a very influential man. And so in the hope of retaining a fifth a successful election, which they didn't get, he put in a vaccination program for girls in July 2007, and then in 2013, boys also received the free HPV vaccine. And so this is what's happened. Genital warts are disappearing. So you'll see that more than a 90% drop in genital warts in women less than 21 years of age. And in heterosexual men who hadn't received it at this point in time, there's been an 80% decline. So very strong herd immunity effect and no substantial decline in men of sex with men. And I'm going to tease you with this slide because I love showing this. But until a few months ago, we had no warts in women less than 21 years of age in 2014 attending the centre. So we used to get about 25% of women in that age group having warts. But in the first quarter of 2014, we haven't had any at all. So we're really losing our expertise in that particular area clinically. But not only have warts gone down, but high-grade histological changes in women less than 18 years of age are following that same pattern. I'd like you to focus on the direction of that graph. It's a precipitous fall in high-grade changes, published by Julia Bratherton. And then if you look, this is some of her work again, if you look at the efficacy of the vaccine in women less than 14 years of age in 2007, you'll see that the efficacy of about 75% to get rid of high-grade histological changes, or CIN2 or CIN3. Now, they're not specific to the vaccine types. That's all histological changes and CIN2. So very, very effective program. And then if you look now at HPV types, so these are women attending family planning clinics before and after the HPV vaccination came in to effect. You'll see that type 16-18 have gone down by about 75% and type 6-11 have gone down by 90%. Now, I'll focus on those numbers. They're different. So the 6-11 has gone down like genital warts, about 90%, but 16-18 haven't gone down quite as much, and that's going to be a focus of one of the challenges I'll highlight in a minute. Now, all of this has occurred, the warts, the HPV change and the histological changes, have occurred with a vaccine coverage of just over about 70% in school-age kids. So that is the level of vaccination that we have had that has given you that effect that you've seen. And one of the things that I think we're most proud of is that while pap smear screening was more common in people who were less disadvantaged and less common in those who are more disadvantaged, if you look at the HPV vaccine coverage, it's equal across both groups, both in the school-age vaccination program but also in the catch-up program, which was put in place to catch as many as female voters as possible in 2007. So what have we learnt So far? We've learnt that it was a political climate when this vaccine came in place. There was a budget surplus. Cervical cancer had occurred in the Prime Minister's wife. The government at the time was polling very badly, particularly in women. That school-based program received a high and adequate coverage. And I'm going to put to you that what we're seeing is a sort of elimination scenario is playing out for genital warts. But the pharmaceutical companies and the money that they put into the vaccine programs not to be estimated also. And if you want to know more about the vaccination program in Australia, you can download that document and have a look at it. But I think you need to understand that the vaccine was introduced into a population who really felt quite positively about vaccines. So more than 90% of people agreed that vaccines are necessary to prevent certain diseases, believe that they're safe for their children to have, and support children being vaccinated in schools. And only a small number, 2 out of 10, believe that if you give multiple vaccines to children, it might impair their immunity. So will warts become like smallpox? I tell you what, they're certainly looking like it at the moment. But that's not the case, I don't think, for 16 and 18 or for men of sex with men. And indeed, that's going to be the issue, the challenge that I think we now face. So the challenge is will warts disappear in MSM like they have in heterosexuals? We now have a free HPV vaccine for boys 12 to 13 and a catch-up program for a couple of years. But will the coverage that we're getting at the moment be sufficient to see that same decline in men of sex with men? Second challenge is, will type 16 and 18 behave the same as genital warts have behaved? And lastly, in view of the ISTDR being in 2015, I just want to touch on whether tourists will matter or not. So the key to this question of whether or not this vaccine coverage is going to be sufficient for MSM is, what is the reproductive rate for HPV in MSM? So how many secondary cases will we get from every primary case? So you'll be aware that you need herd immunity to operate, and to do that you need to have a vaccination coverage that's going to eliminate, that's going to overcome whatever that basic reproductive rate is. Very crudely, it's 1 on 1 minus the reproductive rate. And so smallpox we could get rid of because the basic reproductive rate wasn't that high. And for HPV and heterosexuals, it also doesn't appear to be that high. So a vaccination coverage of 70% seems to be okay. Now, on the right-hand side is the data from Rachel Weiner's original study in university students, where the annual incidence of HPV was about 7% per annum. But if you look at the other side of the graph, these are the three incidence studies in young gay men, but concentrate on Huachan Zhao's one, has a 22% incidence. So incidence reflects basic reproductive rates, so the basic reproductive rate's a lot higher in young MSM than it is in young heterosexuals. And if you look at the level of antibodies that people have developed in their lifetime, this is the HIM study, it's twice as high in MSM as it is in heterosexuals, suggesting the basic reproductive rate is going to be substantially higher. And the basic reproductive rate, as you remember, is a product of three things. Concerningly, if you look at gay men, warts are more common in the anus than the penis, suggesting that epithelium is more susceptible, so the transmission probability may well be higher. The rate of partner change we know is higher and persists for longer. And there's some work to suggest that anal HPV may persist for longer than genital HPV. And so all of those three things may be operating against us as we try and get rid of genital warts in men of sex with men. So if the basic reproductive rate was the same, then we would need to vaccinate, like we are now, about 70% of the population. If the basic reproductive rate was twice as high in men of sex with men, we're going to have to get up to about 85%. And if it's four times as high, we're going to have to vaccinate perhaps more than 90%. And if I use gonorrhea as an example in Australia, if you look at gonorrhea in capital cities in women, the rate is about 10 per 100,000 per year, primarily, I think, as a result of a very accessible primary health care system. But in men of sex with men, because of some of the other factors, the basic reproductive rate is greater than one, and the rate's about 3,500 per 100,000. So the next question is, so how are we going to get that vaccine coverage rate up high enough in men of sex with men? It's probably not going to be enough at 70% or not. So some have argued for a selective vaccination program. I would argue that that's great at an individual level, vaccinating young MSM. I don't think it has a chance in hell of getting near the level that's going to be required if you want that herd immunity effect. childhood, perhaps school-based, perhaps otherwise-based programs. I also think alone probably won't be sufficient. We need both facts and a young MSM in addition to an effective school-based program. But I do make the point that vaccinating young MSM has been shown to be cost-effective. It's shown to be a good value for money at less than $50,000 per quality-adjusted life year, even if you assume that 50% of people are already exposed. So that's something we should be doing for an individual benefit anyway. But if you want that herd immunity, if you want that elimination scenario, we're going to have to go further. I think the second challenge is what level of HPV vaccination we try to eliminate 16 and 18, because of course genital warts are easy, you can see them and so forth, but you need specific studies to analyse that. I think the answer to that question is going to have to await further studies. They're ongoing at the moment, but it may be that we need to vaccinate a higher proportion for 16-18 than we have for 6-11. Anyway, time will give us the answer to that particular question. And lastly, do tourists matter? People love travelling to Australia, and Australians love travelling even more. We get about 6.5 million visitors to Australia every year, which is about a third of the population. And they used to come from Europe, but they don't anymore. So they now come from China, Singapore, Japan, Malaysia, Korea, Hong Kong, to mention some of the ones in the list there. And that equates to about 1 million backpacker nights in any one year. And of course, the night is the particularly dangerous time. So the difference about people coming from the Asia-Pacific area is they haven't got nearly as many of the HPV vaccination programs in place, so we're going to see more genital warts flying into the country. But I make the point that it actually doesn't matter. Because if we have an effective vaccination program that has overcome the basic reproductive rate, then it really doesn't matter if everyone in that A380 Airbus has got genital warts, because they'll die out eventually. Just like gonorrhea that comes in through heterosexuals when Australians visit Asia, it dies out in the population after a few cycles. So now to summarise the lessons we've learned, a 70% coverage probably has created an elimination scenario for genital warts, and we're grateful for the political storm that occurred at that particular time. There's insufficient data to know whether 16 and 18 are going to operate exactly the same way. They're falling less rapidly than 6-11, but we've got our fingers crossed. And it's unlikely that 70% vaccination coverage is going to be sufficient for MSM, and so I'm going to advocate both selective and childhood vaccination programs and at high levels. I can't stop this talk without thanking Basil. Some of the slides on there were his and some of my other colleagues at the Kirby Institute. And just a reminder, in 2015, do come and visit no matter what. You're welcome. Thank you.